Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD, coming to you live from Jupiter, Florida, where it's pouring raining right now, so don't think I'm in the sunshine right now. So, folks, we watched that press conference yesterday, and a lot of people came away from that press conference, and of course, talking about the press conference in regards to Madeline Soto. And this was a quote that I thought was pretty interesting because Chief Betty Holland, who you see the lady, blonde-haired lady on the screen, four stars on her collar, she was very careful with her choice of words. But every once in a while, what they call a Freudian slip would come out. And I think when she said in this, you see this thumbnail on the screen, Madeline Soto, those responsible will be held accountable. Well, who are those? That implies more than one, right? Right now, everyone is looking at, of course, Stephon Stearns, and he's in jail with 60 charges of indictment against him, and he's not going anywhere. But who are those? When we talk about, are there more? Are there more people involved in this? And the chief was very careful in the language and the words he used. And even in the Q&A after the press conference was officially, the presentation was over, she was answered some questions, but she really did not give up a lot in that Q&A session. And I also think that the reporters, the broadcast reporters and the print press that was on the scene, they didn't hit her with many follow-up questions. So she was asked questions and they didn't have follow-up questions that really challenged her. So, but I think it was clear that the chief had no intention of answering some of the more difficult questions. Chief Betty Holland, who you see on the screen. She's a veteran. She knows how to hold a press conference. She knows how to put things out there that she wants out there, and she knows how to hold things back. But again, myself and my co-host tonight, and I'll introduce him in a second, we're going to dissect some of this, and we're going to look at the case a little bit more because this case is still somewhat baffling. If this was New York City, and again, people don't want to, we don't want to hear about the NYPD. You guys think who you are, right? But we would have already locked him up for murder. I'll tell you that right now. They already have probable cause, right? But do they have enough evidence? And they're waiting, I guess I would say, to their credit. And I don't know who's exactly pulling the strings here. Is it the state attorney general's office? Is it the local district attorney's office? Or is it the Kissimmee Police Department? We'll find that out soon. So, folks, hang on to your seats. Hang on to your hats. You're about to enter real crime from a police perspective. And you're entering the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in 10th and Grant's bike by there.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger. Police Off the Cuff fans, I'm happy to say that I have a co-host with me tonight, and he's retired NYPD sergeant, a professor at Albertus Magnus College in Connecticut, a man of reason, the low-key guy, and I'm going to introduce to you now Professor Michael Geary. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, Billy. Good evening. Good to see you. Thank you for having me on. Good evening, everyone who's watching, tuning in.
You know, Mike, we spoke about the press conference. Did you watch the whole press conference yesterday?
I watched clips of it. I was doing it at work on my lunch break, but she's a good poker player. You know, she didn't give up a lot.
I think so. But, you know, as we were just saying, a couple of Freudian slips. Mm-hmm. I just want to point out, and one of them, of course, and let me just put the thumbnail up on the screen. One of them was, she said, interview everyone close to the deceased. Everyone should be treated like a suspect. What do you make of that, Mike?
Billy, I think she's just letting everybody know that the pool of possible, fellow criminals besides Stefan Stearns is very, very limited. We're not looking at teenagers in the neighborhood. We're not looking at people down the block. It's really that, as we talked about, that home and who's ever domiciled within it. That's really the outer perimeter of the number of suspects.
Well, you know, Mike, we used to say that in homicide, people would say, oh, do you have a suspect? And we'd be like, well, everybody's a suspect until we determine that they're not, you know? So that's language. That's homicide language, too. So she was just speaking the speak, talking the talk, and I'm sure she can walk the walk, too. But there were certain things about this press conference, and, of course, a lot of people walked away from it. Mm-hmm. They were very disappointed in what was released, you know. And on the screen right there, we see who everyone believes to be the two main players, of course, Jennifer Soto and Stefan Stearns, who's in jail right now, and the poor little Madeline Soto, 13 years old. And people ask even in the chat, well, what do they have on Jennifer Soto? And I keep bringing up the fact, Mike, and you're an attorney, you could explain it probably better than me. I think that she, at the very least, knowing what I know now and not knowing all of the evidence, that there's something in the law called omission. And I've said this numerous times on other shows. A parent has a legal obligation to act, to take action in situations. And if you don't act, that's a crime called omission. And basically what omission means is that failure to act when you have the legal obligation to act. You want to explain that a little further, counselor?
Yeah. I won't go too crazy. I'll just keep it confined to like this sort of situation. But yeah, any sort of parent, any sort of guardian, any sort of caretaker, it could be like a lifeguard. It could be a babysitter, you know, all these people, they get paid, you know, they have a particular responsibility, or they have that blood relationship. They have that responsibility. They have to safeguard those within their care. No one else does. No one else in the neighborhood does. They are called legal strangers. The only people that are required by law to act are those upon whom a lawful duty to act is, you know, imposed. So there you have fathers, mothers, the guardians, you know, that sort of thing. Here, you know, if there's, and then we also see this in the NYPD, and you'd probably see this in many other police departments, in child neglect cases. If there's a child being abused by one parent and the other parent is neglecting their duty to safeguard that child, or the parent doesn't feed the child, get the child proper medical care, doesn't get clothe the child, feed the child, you know, get the child proper schooling, those are all crimes of neglect, and you're neglecting your legal obligation. And so therefore, by ignoring your legal obligation, you are performing a crime, not of commission, like you're overtly hurting somebody, but you're hurting them through an act of omission by failing to act. So that's what this is. And I am absolutely positive that Special Victims, you know, is looking into this and looking at Madeline Soto, seeing the way she talks, seeing anything they have on record about her, dissecting her, her interviews, and going through with a fine-tooth comb anything and everything that they can see to possibly figure out, was there any sort of awareness that was ignored or neglected by Madeline Soto. I'm sorry.
Like, I cannot believe that this guy was in her life for 5 years.
Right.
And stayed at the house on and off. It's hard to say was he there the whole time. I cannot believe that she didn't know or have any inkling what was going on based on, of course, we looked at the arrest affidavit and the horrific things that were revealed in that. And to say that, I just can't buy it. And many people in the chat, they'll tell me, oh, it could happen. I don't buy it. You could tell me it could happen. I still don't buy it. And that's where the omission comes in.
Right.
If a mother knows that something horrific is happening to her child or in her household and fails to act, then she becomes an accomplice to the horrific act that is being perpetrated on her daughter.
Yeah, we have all kinds of mandated reporters. I remember when they started expanding the list back in like the late 1970s. You've got toll booth collectors, you've got police officers, you've got paramedics, you got nurses, you got doctors, you got teachers, you've got psychologists. You've got all of these cases in all these states, all these people that are mandated reporters if they see any sort of signs of any possible child abuse. So if your child goes to school with a split lip and a black eye and bruising, their teacher sees it, they are a mandated reporter. So yeah, there's been so much for the past 40 years about the awareness of everyone of child abuse and keeping your eye out. I am too incredulous that there wasn't something that may have tripped her awareness. We talked about this before the show. If you can see, and you've been to parties and family gatherings, and you can tell when there's certain tensions, good or bad, amongst people in a party, the way they talk, I just can't. I'll say there's one out of a million chance that she obviously didn't know. But I think there had to be something. Again, hindsight is 20/20. I understand that.
Mike, I said it on the show the other night. I was one of 8 kids.
Right.
And my mother knew when something was wrong with me. She could just read my emotions, read my... So, and that was a woman that had 8 kids. And,
right.
You know, they were Irish 8 kids. So they were like all in a row. There was no breaks. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. 3 of them were not even a year apart. You know, the 3 young boys, there was not even a year apart. I think my mother spent like 11 years pregnant. It was like crazy. But she knew, and we had 8 kids in our family. She knew when there was something wrong. So I'm not buying.
Yeah.
That Jennifer Soto didn't see something. And if she didn't, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Omission. Right. Teresa Richards. Jen said we, but listen to Stefan's interview. He also says we. After Maddie got out, he said she walked away, and that's the last we saw her.
That's
just
right.
Just noticed that the other day. Teresa, very good listening skills. You're right. And language means something. And the interpretation of language means something. So to ignore that, because people that are deceptive, they sometimes catch themselves and they try to correct it. But guess what? It's too late. So, it means something. Valley Girl, 25. But how is mom supposed to know that hidden abuse is happening? I just explained it, Valley Girl, 25. And if you're a mom, most moms out there, they'll tell you they know when something's wrong with their child. And I would appreciate any of you moms out there in the chat that would comment upon that, because I don't think it's something that, people don't, if something like that horrific is happening to Madeline, starting when she was 8 years old, there was no outward signs psychologically. There was no signs physically.
Mood behaviors, mood changes.
Right.
Yeah,
it had to show in some way, and I just don't buy it that that Jennifer Soto didn't see any of these signs.
Yeah, I agree, Billy. You know, you think about you look at your kids. You could tell if they're not feeling well. You could tell their mood by talking to them, how they talk to you in the morning, how they talk to you in the afternoon. They had a bad day at school. I mean, so long as you are actually, you know, chewing gum and you're conscious and you're standing up and you're walking, how do you not see some puzzling, perhaps, changes in your daughter in terms of the way she might interact with Stefan? The first, you know, time that antenna goes up, you got to talk to that child and say, what's going on? Did he smack you? Did he, you know, abuse you? Did he call you a bad name? Did he do what, you know, what did he do? You're my daughter. He's, you know, he's not your biological father. Talk to me. I can't believe that could not have been seen.
Little Red Zero from the chat. I do not understand how Jen did not know this child was being abused at 8 years old. That child would have had injuries, bleeding, etc. Who did that baby's clothes? This makes no sense at all. Little Red, I happen to agree with you, but Valley Girl does not agree with us. When was the last time you guys were single working mothers? Well, obviously never, but we have kids, and I worked three jobs to give my kids the life that they had, and my wife simultaneously worked full-time also. Right. So we did the best we could with our kids, and we could tell if something they were unhappy with something. And look, I'm not pointing fingers, but I'm just saying this occurred over a 5-year period. I'm not buying that Jennifer Soto is innocent.
Billy, it stretches incredulity to believe that.
Mike, stop using all these big lawyers' words. You know, I have a master's degree, but I don't have that vocabulary that all you attorneys have, you know?
The Jesuits didn't improve your vocabulary?
No, I didn't go to Catholic school, you know?
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, it just stretches, reason to believe that there was not a couple of times where there wasn't any sort of indication, trouble with that child acting out in school, talking to her friends. Just something. I'm not buying it. You're not buying it. I don't think a lot of people buy it.
Kissimmee, Florida. Everyone's fear is this will be botched like Kaylee Anthony and Jennifer get off scot-free like Casey Anthony. You know, Kissimmee, someone from that very complex, a gentleman who's on LinkedIn, messaged me tonight, and he's saying a lot of people in that neighborhood are talking, and he said, well, if the NYPD had this case, it would already been solved. And I didn't say it. I wouldn't say that because I think that's sort of an elitist type attitude. And I don't think that I think the Kissimmee Police Department is a good police department. I don't know how often they deal with homicides, but I think they're doing a good job. And the luxury they have in investigating this case is that there's no rush. There is no rush. And they can take as much time as they want to collect the evidence because the main suspect is in jail and going nowhere. I'm going to play a little bit of the press conference from yesterday, and just to watch a little bit of Chief Betty Holland.
Stefan Stearns from our streets. Despite the arrest, our investigation into her disappearance remained ongoing. We understand the importance of thoroughly exploring every lead and piece of evidence. The Kissimmee Police Department, along with other law enforcement agencies in Central Florida, continue their search for Madeline for the next several days following her disappearance, and we turn to the public for help. During this time, our investigators combed through a significant number of tips, and on March 1st, we received information placing Stern's vehicle in a rural area of St. Cloud, where ultimately Madeline's body was discovered. We are all deeply saddened by the outcome of Madeline's disappearance. The Kissimmee Police Department continues to piece together the timeline leading up to the events that occurred. I want to address some questions we are receiving from the media in everyone's effort to keep the community up to date on this tragedy. At this time, Stearns is facing a total of 60 charges related to our investigation. This includes sexual battery, lewd and lascivious molestation, and unlawful possession of materials depicting sexual performance by a child. These charges reflect the meticulous work of our law enforcement community. Our detectives also are working closely with the state's attorney's office for the 9th Judicial Circuit and the medical examiner's office on the investigation. death investigations are complex. Tasks like forensic analysis and thorough interviews are crucial and require careful attention. It is vital to address these misconceptions in the pursuit of justice while preserving the integrity to the case. During an investigation such as this one, we gather additional information from individuals close to the deceased. Each person interviewed is treated as involved until proven otherwise. This is a standard protocol to ensure all the facts are uncovered. During our investigation, we have interviewed many individuals. Each interview has been vital to our understanding of the case. We are reviewing all of the information we received and are following up on every lead. Attention to detail and the diligence are the most important aspects of this investigation. We are committed to transparency and will provide updates when possible. Madeline's story has touched the hearts of many. Rest assured, our department is diligently working on the investigation. And while we appreciate the public's interest, we must prioritize the integrity of the investigation. We appreciate your support and understanding as we gather the facts. We intend to release additional information in the future, providing more details that we do not compromise the ongoing investigation. We vow to do everything in our power to ensure Madeline's memory is honored with justice. Our detectives are dedicated to pursuing every lead, uncovering every fact, and holding those responsible accountable.
There it was. She just said,
"Yeah,"
and holding those responsible accountable. So I don't know if she meant to say that, but that is what we call in psychology 101 as a Freudian slip. What do you make of that, Mike?
Yeah, she's leaving the door open. Now, it could be a Freudian slip, or it could be that it's her way of just letting people know that the door is open, that there is, you know, it's not just Stefan Stearns that is the boogeyman in this case, that there, you know, is perhaps Jennifer Soto is also, she might be called a suspect. She might be called a person of interest. I love when they use these different terms, but that they're still looking at her. I think she's saying that and letting people know that without saying it. And I think that's what she means. So that there's no thought by the press that he is the only one that's being looked at, that they are actually looking at her. I think it's a quiet assurance. I'm hoping it's a quiet assurance that she's giving the public.
Absolutely. Debbie Lamartiniere, I hope I pronounced that correctly. It sounds like it's French, and I'm terrible at French, but Lamartiniere, I think I pronounced it right. Tell me if I did or didn't. Every time I was molested with one of my cousins, my mom was not too far away, but she never knew. No one knew till I turned 50 and told her. First of all, Deborah, I'm sorry that happened to you. And I just also want to say so many people during our show and in our chat have come forward and have admitted to these horrible things happening to them. And I think in a community like this, when you share that, it really helps other people to see that they're not alone. And Deborah, thank you for sharing that happened to you. And look, I come from a background. I was a homicide investigator. I was a boss, all right? So I was a boss of, and my team was six detectives. And I was in charge of running the investigation. So I look at it from that perspective. And maybe I'm not the warmest and fuzziest guy sometimes when I get into that investigative mode. I become the cop, you know? And this is a little different, being a YouTube channel creator and a sort of a talk show host. But the cop in me comes out and I can't help it, you know, because I get laser focused on this. And one of the things here is that we know we have a monster in our midst, and that's already been proven. You don't hear anyone out there saying, "Oh, Stefan Stearns is innocent till proven guilty." Well, that's all true, but they have all this horrific evidence in his cell phone. So I don't think I've heard a single person say that during this investigation. And usually when we do a case, I hear that multiple times, but I'm not hearing it because this monster on the screen here, when we read the charges in the arrest affidavit, the over 60 charges, it just doesn't bode well with someone saying he's innocent until proven guilty. You just don't want to think of that. You just don't want to think of this guy ever walking on this earth again, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, the idea that he's innocent until proven guilty, that's a hallmark and a wonderful hallmark of our legal system, that legal presumption of innocence, which means that the state that's bringing the charges against that person has the burden of proving their guilt to a jury on every facet of the case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a legal presumption. Doesn't mean that people using common sense can't make their own judgment and presumptions and say, I'm presuming by what I hear and by what and what we do know so far. And if you read that affidavit, you realize what is on his cell phone. That's not a random cell phone that they found on the street. That's his cell phone that he's had for a long period of time. And there's images on that that are horrible. So therefore, I think as much as the law wants to presume him innocent, I don't see that it's terrible that people use their regular common sense and say, yeah, the law says one thing, but I'm going to use my own human common sense and say, yeah, I don't believe it. I think he's guilty. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Nobody ever has to apologize for saying that my intuition says that person's guilty. My common sense tells me he's guilty.
100%, Mike, 100%. H. Cook in the chat. I'm not a mother, but a teacher of 37 years. I've reported to protect children. No one hurts even one feeling of my students. H. Cook, you sound like a great teacher. You sound like a really caring human being, and that's so important. Lisa Tyndall, she chose that monster over her daughter. You know, Lisa, it appears that. It appears like that. And we also need to know more information. And we didn't get more information at yesterday's press conference. Elaine McKenzie, 100%, you need to be told when you're overreacting. Most people have that basic understanding. Yeah, I think you're right. Amber Kareem, I asked this question myself. Was she ever taken to a doctor for anything? Well, every kid gets a physical once a year. Did maybe some doctor not see the signs of it? I don't know specifically. I know what boys get at that age, but I don't know the specific examination a young girl gets at a physical for school every year, because you have to get a physical every year for school. I asked that same question, Amber Kareem, and very good question. And obviously no one in the medical field discovered this. So crazy. Kissimmee, Florida. I keep saying it wrong, Kissimmee. I know people say, you're saying Kissimmee. It's Kissimmee. Okay. All right, I'll get it right one of these days. Jennifer thought she had hit the jackpot with a man who would put up with her and be so close and caring to Madeline. A man who doted on her daughter. Jackpot in her mind.
Could be.
Kissimmee, yeah, that could be the case. I don't know specifically if it is the case, but M. Farr from the chat. The grandmother told the reporter that Maddie had anxiety, lots of fears, and didn't sleep alone. She's just as negligent as Jennifer was. That poor kid never stood a chance. That's pretty sad. Even the grandmother recognized this, but no one got the child professional help. Veda, not only that, I'm pretty sure she could have had some kind of bruises. 100%, Veda. Florence Quintana, I heard that MS clothes were found in SS room, and JS didn't notice her own daughter's clothes in there. Florence, there had to have been all kinds of signs that the average person with common sense would have read into and said, wait, that's not right. Something's wrong here. Titanium, I am. I agree the child has one picture that showed the classic panda eyes, which is common for SA children. Titanium, I am. I don't know what you do for a living, but that's pretty intuitive. And maybe you are a teacher or in that field. Sandra Hale, true. I was 24/7 with my kids besides when they were in school. I knew my kids very well when they were younger. I believe Jen is guilty in some ways. Justice for Maddie. 100%. We all want to see justice. Let me go back again just to the press conference for a little bit more.
Now I will open it up for any questions.
Steve, I have a question. We know that you're working behind the scenes during this investigation to make sure everything is in order, but what can you tell us new today that we don't already know?
I don't have anything new that you don't already know, other than our detectives are working tirelessly day in and day out to ensure, you know, all the facts are uncovered.
That was her job, where the question was, what can you tell us that we don't already know? Her job was to tell you nothing. You know, I'm not going to tell you anything. And basically, she sort of just, you know, was there anything other than the Freudian slips released yesterday that would point at anything that we and any of us didn't already know, Mike?
I don't think so. I think it could be, you know, she's just doesn't want to go too far, too long without a press conference. And perhaps it's just to reassure the public through the press that, you know, the we're not going to sleep on this case. It's not like we're just sitting on our laurels. We got the bad guy in prison, and that, you know, that's all we're going to do, and we're just going to button it up. I think there may have been a lot of pressures to say, what else is going on? Could you give us something? And she went out there and she gave just very, very little. But I think she fulfilled an obligation just to assure people, you know, we're still on this. Don't you worry. We're still on it. And I mean, if that's all that she accomplished, that's okay. That's okay. You know,
I can imagine that the press must have been chomping at the bit for some information. Oh, Elaine McKenzie, thank you for the 10-pound super chat. Ladies, we have to stop shitting on our men. Just because your ex is a loser, it does not mean all men are. Yeah, that's true. But you know something? In this case that we're currently covering, this man is the worst of the worst, you know? And it's difficult we can't ignore that at all. He is the worst of the worst. Schmitty, thank you for the $5 super sticker. My mom had a stroke this AM. She's 92, and this 50-year-old is a mess. You're right. Mothers know. She always has. I don't deserve this beauty. Schmitty, I'm so sorry about your mom. Yeah. Hopefully she'll have a rapid and a full recovery. 92 is a wonderful age to live to, and hopefully she'll have many more years, Schmitty. So let me go back to the chief for a little bit more, and then we'll move on.
In this investigation.
Chief Holland, is the mother a suspect or a person of interest in this investigation? And also with the videos that you uncovered, is there any evidence of the mother's involvement on any of these videos?
So everyone that was close to Madeline is considered suspect until we have proven otherwise.
So there you go. That's one of the most important things we heard was that, right. Is the mother a suspect? Did she say no? No, she did not say no.
No.
But what she did say, which was a little bit of a political answer, was everyone that's close to Madeline is a suspect until we can prove otherwise. And that's good homicide protocol, of course. That is good. Look, everyone's a suspect. And, you know, you can't, in a homicide investigation, you can't get tunnel vision. You can't have what we call investigative tunnel vision. And am I having it here? Yeah, I think Stefan Stearns is the man. But could Jennifer Soto be involved? Could they have acted in concert? I think there's a distinct possibility of that. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, Billy, there's no weird relationship that humans have to hurt other people that hasn't happened. There's nothing that you could make up in a fictional story that isn't crazier, weirder, more abusive, more terrible than what happens with people in the, you know, in the world. We've seen, you know, a husband and wife, mass murder, serial killers. It is possible. I'm thinking, looking at Jennifer Soto, and I think about some of the ladies who, you know, whose calls you go to for domestic violence and child abuse and violent family abuse incidents in the Bronx. And I think that she is a person who's very, very needy. I don't think she's a very strong and independent woman. I think she does need a guy. And I think when she met Stephon Stearns. I think she was very happy to have a man, and I think she wanted that stability for her and her daughter. And I think maybe in some ways, maybe subconsciously, but I think she did sell out her daughter for the stability. This is not a unique thing by any means. Unfortunately, it's not unique by any means.
Very sad. Kissimmee, Florida. I always call on you all the time because you have great comments. And think about the Osceola County Sheriff who took a picture of Madeline's body at the crime scene and posted it online. Kissimmee, Florida, that's horrific. I can't understand how that happened. I can't understand what they're going to do about that. I just, it's horrific. There's no way to defend that. By mistake, he said, that's a level of incompetence that has people mad. That is horrific. He's going to probably get disciplined for that. Sharon creates, Maddie A is still here. There wasn't the type of evidence there was in Maddie S case. Maddie A father got probation, mom and Maddie got to live in a shelter. I'm not sure what you're actually referring to. Little Red Zero, I want to know where he picked her up from. Oh, she was deceased already. Is there in camera showing him putting her in the car? It's not making sense. He did not live there. I think he did live there off and on, or from what I understand, you have to have a key or some kind of fob to get into that. It's a gated community. So he must have had that because he was going back and forth in his car. You can't just pull into that community unless you have the pass that gets you through the gate. So that would indicate to me that he does live there, or he has permission and authority to go in there. Christina, I make sure I know how my son is feeling since he was little, told him he should tell me anything that bothered him, including family members. He's now 27. It still stands. I would die for my son. Christina, good for you. I want to play this. This is a little bit from Court TV, and it's in regards to Jennifer Soto.
Other's live-in boyfriend was there, Stephon Stearns, a man who had been in Madeline's life for at least a couple of years. In fact, Jen referred to him as Madeline's stepfather, even though they were not married. The next day, Jen and Stephon say Stephon gave Madeline a ride to school. They also say Madeline was embarrassed and did not want to get dropped off in front of the school, so she was dropped off at a church parking lot less than half a mile away. That's the last time they say anyone had contact with her. Investigators say the evidence paints a much different picture. They claim they have evidence of Stearns dumping Madeline's laptop and backpack in a dumpster and have images of Madeline dead inside Stearns' car. Madeline never made it to school and was found 4 days later in some brush 17 miles from their home in Kissimmee, Florida. Stearns was arrested after images of Madeline being sexually assaulted were allegedly found on his phone, some dating back to when Madeline was just 11. But at this point, there have been no charges related to her death. Tonight, we take a closer look at the story told by Madeline's mother, then take a look at the recovery scene. What will this autopsy reveal? All this as we investigate the tragic life and death of Madeline Soto.
I'm Vinnie Politan. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's just not fair. It's not fair what happened to this little girl. It's beyond outrageous. Tough life. She's being tortured. She was being tortured. The allegations are that this was going on for years, this sexual abuse in this home, and it's not stopping. You know, why didn't it stop? Why didn't someone step in? Why didn't anyone know? A lot of questions tonight, but the bottom line to all of this, she only lived to her 13th birthday, and it's not fair what happened to her.
Well, I think we would all agree what happened to her is horrific, and The big job now, of course, is to solve this case and to find out the truth and who's responsible for this and hold the people responsible for this accountable. And that's what the Kissimmee police are doing right now in building this case.
We don't know everything, but we're going to try to learn a lot more tonight. So let's start with what we know right now about Mom's story. And it begins, let's take a look at the arrest affidavit. This is the arrest of Mr. Accidental Factory Reset. On February 26, 2024, approximately 2,000 hours, Madeline Soto, 13-year-old, was reported missing by her mother. The mother advised her daughter's stepfather, home, and it's not stopping. You know, why didn't it stop? Why didn't someone step in? Why didn't anyone know? A lot of questions tonight, but the bottom line's all.
I think we went a little bit backwards there. I wanted to just raise some of these questions, of course. When we watch the interviews of Jennifer Soto and Stephon Stearns, and that, of course, has been the subject of all kinds of body language readers and everything, and there was a lot of inaccuracies in them. And some, you know, when people write down a statement, they have people that analyze written statements, but you can also analyze the spoken word. And just the use of we, the term we said a lot. And one of the things that they were trying to say early on was that he drove her to school and then he dropped off at the church, but he never did that, those things. That never happened. And one of the things we're all dying to know is, well, how did he leave the complex with her in the car, presumably at that point dead, and come back into the complex? And she was viewed in the car. And again, the police felt that she was not alive at that point. That's what I think the police know what happened, but we do not know what happened. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, I think that, you know, when you're talking about the body language and looking at the interpreting their words, she adopted kind of like his language, saying we dropped her off at one point. He was using her language, saying we. So in a weird way, they're both covering for each other because they both have this. They're letting the public know that we did this, we did that. And I think that's a defense mechanism that I think people see through very, very, very easily. What I want to see now, and I hope to hear very soon, is the actual cause of death. Was it, you know, I don't want to be graphic, but, you know, what was the actual cause of Madeline's death? To me, that would give me a really good idea of maybe give me a better idea of who actually would be the one who actually caused her death directly that morning. Very, very, very scary that to think that he would go around in a car with her with the seat slightly reclined and telling people that she was asleep, you know, and very, very, very strange. And that the mother's right there and another interview saying, yeah, we. Very, very strange. And I think that leads a lot of people to get very suspicious about the mother in this case. I don't think she did herself any favors whatsoever by using that term we and joining him, his story, and her story together.
I agree with you, Mike. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up. Hit the like button. We need likes. We need people to like us. And share us with your friends and your family. And if you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels. And we also have a YouTube channel membership with five different levels. And that helps us keep this channel going. And we get a lot of support from you guys, and we appreciate it. I'm going to put this on the screen. These are some of the inconsistencies that Jennifer Soto was caught in.
She last saw her daughter 8 a.m. on Monday, February 26, getting dressed before school. But she also told you guys in an interview she last spoke to her daughter on Sunday, February 25th. So to me, this is the biggest mystery that I have. Where's mom in the morning? Who's in the house? When could this have happened? Where was the party? What time was the party? Where was mom? Did mom speak to her in person? Did she speak to her on the phone? Any clarity on any of this, Shannon?
Well, we know that her mom said that she was not at the party, and I think folks at that party confirmed that she was not there. She somehow was back in that apartment, enough for the mom to say that she had that long conversation with her about how excited she was about the party, how she liked her gifts. We have video of that birthday party. We know that the little girl did celebrate her birthday, but once she got home, that's the problem that we're having. Did you say goodnight to your daughter, as you told us originally, and then someone told you that he took her to school? Because then in the affidavit or the incident report, the first responding deputies, when they talked to her, she said she saw her get dressed for school. Then she saw Stephen Stearns drive her then to school around 8:30. But remember, that video evidence at 8:19, according to the sheriff's office, shows that she was likely already deceased. So if she saw her get ready at 8 and then said he took her at 8:30, it's not possible, if you look at the evidence that those deputies pulled from the apartment complex. They believe at 7:35, when her backpack was dumped in that dumpster, she was likely dead then. In fact, one of the reports, it says that Stephen Stern said that he saw her in that parking lot actually open her book bag and was digging for something. And he said, I thought it was her headphones, because she was always looking for her headphones. That was the same backpack that detectives say he threw in the dumpster at 7:35 in the morning. There is video at that church parking lot, but they've never said that's actually her. They had some conversation with them early on, and they've held on to that story that she was in that church parking lot. But no one has ever said that was actually her. It was grainy video, but detectives do not believe that was her, seeing as how at 8:19, they believe she was dead.
I know investigators know so much more than we do, right? They're holding back. They're putting together, as you described, that airtight case that is necessary to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. But this is just, it's not adding up. Like, it's not adding up. It's
not adding up to the press. But again, yes, the police know what's going on. Marie GRN, thank you for the $4.99 super sticker. My daughter's 24, and we were on Face 2 nights ago, and I knew something was wrong. She was upset about something. She's a liar, Jennifer. I agree with you. Kasemi, spot on, Bill. The police know exactly what happened, who killed her, when she was killed, who in the family communicated with who in the aftermath, and why she was killed early that Monday morning. I believe all this is true, Kasemi, and I think that they're holding on to it right now for some reason. They're not releasing it. And I think at some point, you've built your case at some point. How long are you going to investigate this for when the evidence is in your face? You know, the evidence is in the cell phone. The evidence is in other people's cell phones. The forensic evidence is in the location where the murder took place. That's the other thing that Mike had alluded to earlier, is that we still don't have the cause of death. But you know something? They were calling this right from the beginning a murder, weren't they? Weren't they calling that? But the medical examiner has never ruled that this is a homicide. But they're calling this a murder investigation, aren't they? Is that another indication? I think so. Yeah, I think so. But they're not going to come out and say, oh, yes, this is a murder. Well, it is a murder investigation, which would be indicative that the matter of death is homicide, isn't it? Mike.
Yeah, Billy, I think the probably what maybe the holdup is, and I saw in the chat people were commenting on it, very good comments, that maybe there's a toxicology report. Maybe they're looking for any sort of perhaps alcohol, pills, anything, almost like a date rape drug, something to knock her out, a tranquilizer, something like that, just to make sure, dot their I's, cross their T's. But, you know, they've done that autopsy. They've got everything they need. And I guess they're just waiting on those last few things. Remember also, too, and for a lot of people, and we've talked about this with the Koberger case in connection with that case, cell phone data, you know, cell phone dump is going to take probably 6 to 8 weeks, 10 weeks to get. So I think they know what they know. And there's a few things that I think they also know what they don't know, and that they're just waiting to tie up everything. Probably that's where they are. He's not going anywhere. Everybody should know that. So that's really good. Even if something happened and he was never charged with a homicide, he's still going to do life behind bars pretty much for just what we already know and what all the information they got on him already. But just a little patience. I'm very impatient because, like everybody else, I want to know what happened to.
Well, we're New Yorkers. We want it to happen yesterday. You know?
Just like that. Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Little Red Zero, your question, what time did they get evidence out of the dumpster? That was 07:35 on Monday. Mm-hmm. And at 08:19, he's seen driving back into the complex with Madeline in his car. And the chief Mena said that they felt, based on the video evidence and other evidence that only known to them, that she was already dead inside the car. So one of the things I would ask a lot of people, do you think that's guilty knowledge driving around with a dead body? What do you think? Do you think that is consciousness of guilt, as Professor Geary would say? If you're driving around in a car with a dead 13-year-old in the car, I don't know anyone else in my life that has done that, you know, and I would say that is absolutely guilty knowledge. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, it does seem rather strange. And I think like you and I both think, and Phil, we all think he's probably figuring at that point he's going to be seen on a couple of cameras, and driving around maybe aimlessly for a couple of minutes here and there, up and down like an avenue, a couple of streets, a couple of roads, that he can at least say he was out and doing things. And I don't think he probably realized that there was a video surveillance camera by the dumpster, but I think he's trying to provide himself with her in the car driving around so that he could say, oh, he was out and about at these times in that morning. He was busy doing errands, and, you know, he dropped her off and he was all busy doing errands for a while. To me, that's consciousness of guilt. But then again,
the other thing is technology is going to nail him to the wall also. And potentially if Jennifer's involved, her too, because cell phones also have cell site information that gives the GPS coordinates to where you are at a specific time. So the location of Stephon Stearns is going to be tracked all along the way. And the same thing with Jennifer Soto. So if they are complicit and they are acting in concert, and if she is involved in this, they will have the digital evidence that will also nail her, because I'm thinking that she's involved because I don't like the answers she's given when she's interviewed. The other thing I want to mention is that Chief Betty Holland said in response to a question by a journalist, is Jennifer Soto cooperating? And she gave a really sort of coy answer. She said, well, she is cooperating, or she did cooperate when they interviewed her once. They interviewed her once. They haven't interviewed her again because they know the next time they go back to interview her, they're going to be interviewing her with handcuffs on. So that's the question, is that they're saving that. They're saving that big interview. And also, the second time you go to interview someone, that may be the time she says, I want an attorney. So they know that. They know that. So they're sort of putting it on the back burner right now. If it was me, I'd go after her right now. I wouldn't wait, because the chances that she invokes counsel are pretty high if you wait too long. So I would have went for the gusto early on in this investigation.
Yeah, Billy, the longer you wait, and the more that she hears that about from the press about what maybe going on. Maybe there's a leak here or there, you know. There's a nosy reporter that put something out there that may have been told in confidence. The more she's going to know that, you know, the spotlight is on her. Early on, when poor Madeline was missing, you know, the mother is always going to give an interview. The dad is always going to give an interview, that sort of thing. And then maybe one or two others. But once they've got, they've recovered her body, they've done the autopsy, you know, there's the time now. To me, if I'm her, I'm like, I got to get a lawyer. I don't know who I'm going to get, but I got to get one because I can't go into any interview room without a lawyer present. In fact, I'm just going to tell them, you know, I really can't speak to you right now. I'm too distraught. On advice of counsel, I can't speak to you. You're right. The longer you go, the longer it's easier for her to get a lawyer.
And could that be, and I'm very reluctant to criticize any police department that I don't know their talent level. I don't know how many homicides they investigate a year. Could it be that they're not experienced at this? I don't know. I'm not from Kissimmee. I know a lot of areas outside of Orlando have a lot of crime. So perhaps they are experienced, but I don't know for sure. But some people from the area seem to be indicating that they're a little concerned. Marianne Birdie, do they have a time of death? It would be interesting to know if both their phones pinged at the same location. Marianne Birdie, no, they do not. At least we do not. Do the police? I think they have a hypothesis. They have an educated guess based on a lot of different things. The last time someone's spoke on their cell phone, the last time she was seen alive. Those are potentially timestamps there. Then we have to look at the suspects. Where did their phones ping? When was the last? What you know, the other thing is that we don't know either. We're not privy to. Did Stefan and Jennifer communicate during this time when no one knew where Jennifer was and when Stefan was driving around? Did they communicate? We don't know that. But do the police know that? You bet they do. Mike.
Yeah, the police are going to figure out pretty much a map. They're going to take that map of Florida, and they're going to figure out where that car was driving, where it went. They've got license plate readers. They got the cell information. You've got surveillance video. They're going to be able to track minute by minute for the course of that critical, like, say, hour. And they'll have it figured out in a couple of weeks when they get all that data. But yeah, that's the part about crossing the I's, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, because you want to be able to go when you do have an interview with the mother, when you know that sort of thing. If you get that opportunity, you don't want to ever ask a question to a suspect that pretty much, if you can help it, that you don't already know the answer to, especially at this date in the investigation. Very early on, you're asking questions. You don't know what the answer is going to be. But later on, you know, you got to be very careful. You got to be very cagey. And all that is those little electronic breadcrumbs that lead the police to figure out where they were, what they were doing, and at what particular time they were doing it. And that's what's absolutely necessary. That's what's going to put the criminal, whomever is responsible in this case, behind bars forever.
100%. Just me from the chat. Do you think the fact that it was her 13th birthday is significant? Police off the cuff, her first teen birthday. I think it could be. I absolutely think it could be. I don't know for sure. I think this would be better answered by psychologists, behavioral analysts. They would have a better idea of the implications of a 13-year-old who's being abused, and is her abuser turned off by the fact that she's turning into a woman? That's really sick when you think about it, right? But that could be. And as I said, I think that's better answered by a behavioral analyst, not myself. Jason Brown, only an exclusion of juvenile access to the internet will exclude this possibility. Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but this, look, this type of stuff happened before the internet. Florence Quintana, I have bipolar and some of the medications I take is Seroquel, basically the same medication as Thorazine. It knocks you out cold. Maybe Jen was on an antipsychotic and really didn't know. That's okay. A possibility. It is a possibility. Topaz, I think so too. There was someone else involved. Pick me, Lou's mother, who didn't protect her daughter. Yeah, I think that one of the things that we all found a little suspicious was right here, this little interview that she did for this TV station.
It was until after school pickup at 4 o'clock when I went to go pick her up and she wasn't at school.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, I feel like somebody took her. What's your interpretation of that?
Yes, that stuck out to me too, because she seemed to have been more connected, like authentically connected to when she said that. And, you know, yes, somebody did take her. I mean, allegedly, we don't know. But, I mean, she could have been thinking in her mind that it was her boyfriend, you know. He did take her. Well, I know I hesitate to say that. But, I mean, you know, this is so frustrating. Everybody's frustrated because we aren't getting much information. And so there are all these possibilities. And, I mean, I could tell you a whole bunch of different scenarios that are possible involving the two of them. It's really hard to tell. It's really hard to tell what the right answer is because you could interpret things. I mean, for example, there are things online. I don't know if these things are true, of course, but there are things online about that the party was at her grandmother's house. And so that adds all kinds of possibilities. So, for example, did the mother say goodnight to her in person in her home? Did she say goodnight to her on the telephone when she was at the grandmother's house or somewhere else? That's one of the examples.
Yeah. We've got more to cover, though.
So these are some of the things, the possibilities that, again, the police know the answers to, but we don't. We don't know the answers to. Rosa Garcia, thank you for the $4.99 super sticker. They are both not very smart. He was very reckless, which may indicate not premeditated. Well, I think there's a lot of evidence it was premeditated based on the 60 charges in his phone going back 4 to 5 years. I think you have to consider that premeditation. And it's very scary, but some of the things, there's obviously lots of evidence that we don't know about. And of course, number one with that is the autopsy. Number two is the crime scene. Number three is all the digital evidence and the cell phone evidence that they have. The home of Jennifer Soto, Madeline Soto, and where Stefan Stearns frequently stayed. All of those things, we don't know the answer to these questions. However, the police do. And, you know, we were all disappointed yesterday that the press conference didn't provide us with more information. And the police have the information, but they're going to keep it very close to the vest until they determine they got enough and they have enough evidence to put him away for the rest of his life. Mike.
Yeah, Bill, at this point, you know, I like a lot of other people and you too. I want to hear more from the police. I want to hear about the, you know, the cause of death and things like that and the time of death. But I think I'm also very happy that they are playing it close to the vest and they're not going to say anything. They're not leaking information. But I'm hoping that within the next 4 weeks this time in April, that by that point, they'll have some, maybe more information on the cell phone data, toxicology reports and things like that. But it's hard for me too. Like a lot of other people, I'm impatient. I want to know more about the case, but I think, you know, we all have to just be patient and pay. And the police are doing it in Kissimmee, Florida are doing a great job. And let's consider that and be very confident that they're going to continue to do a good job.
100%. I want to play a little bit of this from Court TV.
Special guest, you will recognize him. He is a forensics expert. He's the owner of Kenny Kinsey and Associates, Dr. Kenny Kinsey. Good morning to you, Dr. Kinsey. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Good morning, Ms. Julie. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So you heard me talking with Cody about, was he there making it look like he was changing a tire to be in the vicinity to dispose of the body? Curious of, you know, what your thoughts are on that, Dr. Kinsey.
Well, Ms. Julie, many times these predators really don't have a plan for the end game. So you may see a level of staging. They call it ad hoc staging, where it's not necessarily premeditated, but Stearns is taking advantage of every opportunity to dispose of this young lady.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Dr. Kinsey, I'm wondering if the homicide occurred in the home. I'm just wondering that because of the allegations of sexual abuse that have already been brought against Stephen Stearns. And then we know police have said there was a point where they've got surveillance video of his car returning to the home, and they believe that Madeline's body is already lifeless, but still in that vehicle at the time. And then they believe, you know, the disposal perhaps may have occurred in the early morning hours the day after her death. Talk to us about your thoughts on how this child might have died, and then how the plan to dispose of her body may have been carried out.
Well, in this situation, Ms. Julie, we see, I believe what we see is that law enforcement did enough in stage one that they can slow down the game. They have these additional charges with exploitation and trafficking of other children. So they're able to slow it down. They've got Stearns put where he needs to be, and I don't believe we're gonna see him ever get out. But now law enforcement can slow down and do that methodical forensic investigation. And I'm sure they are probably processing evidence daily to get us those answers. But the perfect part of this investigation, if you could have a perfect part, was they come out of the gate swinging, and they got enough on the front end that.
And we may be having a little bit.
Their channel's having a little bit of technical difficulty. I'll remove it. So, folks, basically what they're talking about is building the crime scene, the forensic evidence, putting it all together. And we know that once they put all of this stuff together, that they're going to have a very, very solid case. Mike, I think that's going to be our show for this evening. You know, recapping the press conference, we all sort of agreed that there wasn't enough there. You know, there wasn't enough in this press conference that really almost even called for a press conference based on what they released. Your thoughts?
Yeah, she was, the chief was very, at the end, pretty just told like this, yeah, I don't have anything new. And that was kind of disconcerting because you usually don't hear that kind of talk. But I think she did it just to let people know that, yeah, they are still working. They still don't have everything yet. You know, we're not dropping the ball on this case. Please be confident that, you know, we did really well in the beginning. We're going to continue to do well. We got this in hand. And I think it just to assure the public that this is still a top priority for them. But kudos to the Kissimmee Police Department and the chief for looking like a professional department, really doing a good job.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. As new things come up in this case, we'll revisit it. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff. Have a great night, and God bless everyone.
Good night.
One episode, just ain't enough.